Good evening, everybody. This is Erica Luke, and you are here on KGRA Digital Broadcasting Network, only the best on the planet for all things alternative. This is UFO Audit, and tonight I have two very special guests. Steve Bassett will be joining me here in a couple minutes, and Merrill Cook, who is from my home state, will be joining us at the very end of the hour to talk about all the things they're doing. I'm very excited about that. But I have to give a little shout out to the fabulous Jill Hansen, who is celebrating her one-year anniversary on KGRA Radio. Jill has an amazing show. She's doing a three-hour special tonight with Bill. I love Bill. He's in the chat room right now. So we are excited. Jill is an amazing person. She has been so kind to me, and I just want to congratulate her. She is a beautiful person. Great show. And my fabulous producer, Jamie, who said he was going to talk tonight.
I am here.
Yay. Okay. So how is the website coming? We need a website update.
The website, you know, it's up to you. It's basically everything's there. We just have to get the graphics, all of them, looking the way you like them. And then we can switch over the main URL and it'll become the main site.
Oh, dear. So it's all up to me. That's all right. Well,
I mean, if you want anything else added to it, you know, you just got to go through it and let me know. And then we'll finish
it. It's looking really, really good. And I'm very excited. I can't thank you enough. So not only are you a great producer, you're fabulous with my website. And that'll be up. We'll get it up this week. And then we'll have some great articles on Project Orange, Orange Orb sightings from all over the world, information, resources, as well as links to Paradigm Research Group and all of these wonderful organizations, NARCAP, that really go above and beyond to help us understand this very important phenomenon. So we'll be looking forward to that. We are 1 week away from the 2015 International MUFON Symposium. So 1 week from tonight, I hate to rub this in, you guys, but I'm going to be with my peeps. We are going to be having a good time, and Paul T. Hellier will be speaking right now. We'll be at the MUFON Awards Banquet. It's going to be a great time. If you are in the Irvine, California area, please stop by and see us. We're having a Hangar One cast party on Saturday night. Good times, and you can go to UFO Audit for live posts from me, pictures. MUFON.com will also have some interviews with the guests that I will be doing, so check it out. And now we have a certain somebody special on the phone, I'm hoping.
So yes, you do.
Yes, I do, and I am so thrilled to have you here. And I did not get a chance, because I was just busy talking, but to introduce you. And all of you who are in the chat room and listening, you have to know who this wonderful man is. Stephen Bassett is a political activist, a lobbyist. He is the leading advocate for ending the government-imposed truth embargo. I have never honestly met a man with this much tenacity. I say that every time I talk about him, but Stephen, you are incredible. I don't know how you do it.
You're killing me, kiddo. You're killing me.
It's true, though. I just, you know, there are very few people in the world that have that drive, and there is just something about you, and you go for it, and you never let up. You're relentless.
Actually, there's a lot of people in the world that have this kind of drive, and there's a lot of activists in the world that are trying to deal with the dysfunctions and problems that have emerged in the 20th century, certainly, which practically, you know, up through end of World War II, were just nothing you could do. I mean, but after World War II, we started to get optimistic about being able to deal with things. The fact is that the majority or a significant portion of all of this effort done by all of these incredibly dedicated people is simply being squashed by governments.
Right.
There are a number of countries out there where things are running well, activists and social programs can be dealt with, and things are working okay. But there's a number of countries where that is not the case, and these, by and large, are the biggest countries in the world. And they're creating chaos, mayhem, wars, bloodshed, destroying money, financial status, they're destroying infrastructure. And so, believe me, there's plenty like me. I am fortunate that I have an issue that, frankly, I can pursue without having to traipse through battlefields, hide in, you know, bombed out buildings, or face, you know, tropical diseases. I mean, it's a high intellectual process and an issue that is quite extraordinary and by and large pretty safe to follow. So I'm very, very fortunate. And by the way, just for the record, I want to say that one minute before I'm supposed to come on your show, I get a call from you, from your people, and then, but it doesn't go through my Skype on the computer because my system was in the process of crashing. My system is completely crashed, and it's going to take like 30 minutes for it to reboot. And this happened to me not long ago, within like one minute before I was supposed to go on Art Bell on Dark Matter Radio.
Oh,
and
yes, I was listening.
Now, I've been working all day on this machine. It's been perfectly fine, no problem. But just as I'm going to go on the show, it locks up. I can't get out of it. I close out finally on the power switch. I come back in. It's doing a complete disk check. I'm amused by this. It's either extraordinarily odd luck or it's fun and games. It really doesn't matter to me, but it's amusing. So anyway, but we're good. We're on the air. Well, ask me anything you want.
And I just have to say, too, that to me, you know, I was doing some research today, and it was odd because my computer would crash at very, you know, questionable times. And I just kept thinking to myself, my gut was saying, this is odd. This doesn't seem right. But who knows? I know that when you get out in this world, you just have to chuckle like you were doing because you're always...
Look, if it's system crashes, you know, whatever, that's no big deal. If that's exactly all I have to put up with, I'm gold. Anyway, I got a high quality cell phone here with built in Skype. I got earphones. We're using satellites. We're good.
Good. Well, I'm glad because I'm really happy to have you here. And we have to know you are always doing so much. So what is happening this week in your world?
What things are coming to a head fairly quickly, and your listeners probably don't know this. They unless they're getting updates from PRG and assiduously scanning news alerts from their Google, you know, search alerts, which most people don't do, where you put in a phrase and it'll send you every day any articles, even web stuff that mm-hmm. has that phrase in it. So don't choose an easy phrase. I mean, otherwise you'll get 40 billion. You got to choose something that's relatively, you know, narrow. But they wouldn't know. This is all happening in Washington. So I have every opportunity to let people know, and we do that through email updates. Also, you know, PRG is involved in a number of Facebook pages, which I'll mention later. But here's what's going on. Essentially, on November the 4th, of last year, PRG launched this congressional hearing initiative. It's more than just that, but it's initially platformed off the congressional hearing process. And that was all set up by the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure of 2013. So on November the 4th, this is what's happened since November the 4th. And it's all pointing towards a particular something that's going to happen, I believe, pretty soon. One, the original Citizen Hearing on Disclosure got quite a bit of media. Okay, that sort of put it in play. Then on November the 4th, we sent a 30-hour video record of the entire Citizen Hearing on Disclosure to every member of Congress, which kind of put it into play on Capitol Hill. All right? Then, at the same time, we have a Twitter team, right, that that is working out of a Facebook page called the Disclosure Lobby. Anybody wants to join this, feel free. It's a group. Disclosure Lobby is a group Facebook page. It's got almost 13,000 members.
Wow.
And quite of them are involved in the Twitter team. And starting in November the 5th, running through the end of January, this team sent out somewhere around 1.4 million Twitter messages to the entire Congress, just spreading them out over the entire Congress, and also Facebook messages. That sense is narrowed down, and then we're focusing on other targets. But that essentially spread it all over Capitol Hill that a congressional hearing initiative was underway regarding the ET issue and the fact that we want hearings in Congress, the first since 1968. I arrived on November the 20th. We did some preparation, and on January the 3rd, we went from the entire Congress and narrowed it down to six committees, basically, which are the focus of this right now. The two intelligence committees, the two science and tech committees, House and Senate, and then, of course, the Senate Homeland Security, and perhaps the one that will be the ultimate home for this, which is the Senate Armed Services Committee. And all of them received verbal messages to meet with me regarding holding new hearings on the ET extraterrestrial presence issue. Then, in early February, they got faxes, several, making these requests and bringing it to their attention. Then all of their scheduling offices got scheduling requests to meet with them.
Wow. Right?
In addition to that, since my computer is in the process of doing a major reboot, I'm going to have to kind of remember, starting in November, articles in the political press about the Congressional Hearing Initiative and the other stuff we're going to talk about started appearing. Washington Times. There have actually been three in the Washington Times in the political section. And then riot.org, which is a up-and-coming news site, went into it heavily. And then Roll Call, Congressional Quarterly, does an extensive article on their website on this. And that's followed by Mother Jones Magazine. And then Roll Call does another one. New York Magazine, the New Republic Magazine does an article. Also, I'm missing a couple there. Then as of this week, on the 16th, the New York Observer in New York, a very respected weekly up there with a very strong website.
And that is an amazing article. I have to say, I was so excited for you when that came out.
This is an article, again, addressing all this, what's going on. And so all of this press is unprecedented. When I say press, all of this particular media coverage, this coverage is not about UFOs. This is about exopolitical engagement of the issue in Washington, D.C. Never seen coverage like this before, which is, of course, the intention of the whole thing. And so the idea that somebody is trying to get congressional hearings for the military agency political witnesses on Capitol Hill is all over the place. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to be driving up to your door and escorting you down to the Capitol in a limo. No,
right.
They're not going to do any. You have to keep coming back at them because they're still frozen in the truth embargo. It doesn't matter what they know. They still believe they cannot do anything. They cannot say anything. But they can take meetings. And so starting in early March, I have been meeting with members of the House and Senate side. Had a number of them. There's more scheduled. So actual meetings are taking place. Now, it's still early. But all of this is happening in Washington right now and has been developing, going all the way back to November of last year and really more intensely in January of this year. Now, that's significant. But there is another part of this, what I call a second stream, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the second stream is the political engagement of the media in the context of the current endless and incredibly expensive presidential campaign designed to eventually give us a new president of the United States, for what that's worth. And that stream involves a extremely political component of the extraterrestrial presence issue, namely the connection between Secretary and candidate Hillary Clinton, her husband, and top political advisors and former colleagues of the Clintons to the extraterrestrial issue, going back to the Rockefeller Initiative of 93 to 96.
Right.
And
please tell us, because that is so fascinating, and the meeting that Hillary had with Rockefeller in 1995.
Talk about,
So tell us about that a little bit. Give us some background on that, because I think a lot of people don't understand the gravity of that.
Well, it is probably going to be the switch that turns the media on, or the clippers that cut the leash that the truth embargo has imposed on the media. Very likely. In fact, one author in one of the articles referred to it, and this, he was quoting me basically, that the Rockefeller Initiative is going to be the exopolitical blue dress for Hillary Clinton. Now, this is kind of crass, but you know,
but it's good though.
It's good, but crass. The younger people may not know, but the blue dress refers to the dress that Monica Lewinsky wore during one of her trysts with the president, that Linda Tripp got her hands on, that she had never cleaned, and it was taken to the Washington Post, and eventually it was examined, and a DNA match was done between the dress and the president, thus leading to his profound apologies and ultimately his impeachment. It's a big friggin' deal, and that was one of the biggest media frenzies of all time. This is infinitely more important than that stupid dress, but the historical comparison is hard to avoid. Why? Because Bill Clinton won the presidency in 1992. You know, it wasn't his fault. He just got elected. And if he hadn't won the presidency, we'd be talking about George H.W. Bush and his colleagues right now, maybe. All right?
Right.
So what happened? What happened is this. As I've repeated many times, but will continue to repeat many times, because as I say, this is a big deal. Lawrence Rockefeller, friend of the Clintons, like a lot of smart people back in 1992 knew, that once the Cold War was over, the principal barrier to people coming forward and spilling the beans on the ET presence was really gone. And that disclosure or a formal announcement was probably the appropriate thing to do. Oddly enough, there was something else that should have happened in 1992, or 93 rather, once the new president was in, was the embargo on Cuba should have been ended. I mean, it was no longer served any purpose, and it was only going to be a liability. But our esteemed Congress and so forth, crack Congress, highly efficient Congress, just wouldn't do it. So that didn't happen. But the other thing that didn't happen is that, it was supposed to happen, was the truth embargo now could be ended. And Lawrence Rockefeller, who had a great interest in the subject and had supported research into the field, makes a, you know, he's pretty old. Well, late in life. He makes an extraordinary decision to go to the White House, approach the White House through the Office of Science and Technology Policy, and propose a meeting with the Clinton, a report to the Clintons, or rather to President Clinton, and so forth. Now, look, he's a friend. He could have called him up on the phone, in the evening and said, you know, Bill, let's talk about this. But no, he wanted a public, open, formal approach, because that's what you're supposed to do. And so he did it, and he approached the Clinton administration. And Dr. John Gibbons, the science director, was the man that was the interface. He wasn't thrilled about it.
He was quite demeaning in a way.
Demeaning, but certainly dissuasive. And Rockefeller, no fool, and there's a couple of people involved, some of the principals involved, and there are 30, by the way. Six are dead, 24 still alive. And this wonderful story about how when he started getting sort of this resistance from Gibbons, he sort of mentioned that he was seriously considering running a full-page ad in all of the American newspapers, essentially asking for what he wanted to present to the president, namely all of the files in the government hands on, quote, UFOs would be released to the public, the whole shebang. And amnesty would be provided to witnesses that would come forward and make sure they had no legal consequences. Immediately, Gibbons changed his attitude and said, "Oh, don't do that. We don't want to do that. Let's work together. And so forth." And so that was it. That went off. They go. And this initiative, this effort by Rockefeller, which we call the Rockefeller Initiative now, they didn't call it that then, went on within the administration for 3 years, ending in October, leading up to the next election that Clinton was facing. Now, in any non-Orwellian or non-Alice in Wonder
Lewis Carolian world, that's big. That's news. That's all over the media and a huge issue being raised by the opposition party. But no, there was only one article written, really, one copy of that article in the New York Observer, oddly enough, and then no follow-ups, and that's it. And then it just disappeared. The media never touched it.
That is so amazing to me. That just makes, I don't know, that gets me going, as I'm sure it does you.
Well, it's about as amazing as if the media learned that there was an affair with an intern, wrote one story about it, and never asked another question about it again. That's how amazing it would be. But, of course, we're talking sex there, and that's so much more important to our media than the presence of extraterrestrials. So what happens is this goes on for 3 years, and a lot of people close to the Clintons, high up in the Clinton administration, were involved directly or knew about it. And that might be the end of the story, except Grant Cameron, my distinguished colleague from Canada, submitted, he wasn't the only one that did this, but his was the most comprehensive. He submitted an FOI request to the Office of Science and Technology Policy. And somebody either made a mistake or deliberately gave him the goods. And the only reason that was possible is because the OSTP, for reasons that are not, I think I understand, but for whatever historical reason, was exempted from the Presidential Records Act. Now, the Presidential Records Act is the legal basis on which you get access to presidential records, White House stuff. And it's its own rule, its own law. FOIA, it's outside the FOIA. The OSTP wasn't under that law. And so it was subject to the FOIA. And when that came in, they sent him 1,000 pages, which confirmed the Rockefeller Initiative. It's all there. It's all there. Everything. Well, not everything. There's probably other documents which are in the presidential records and maybe in other files in other agencies that we don't have. But we have enough to pretty much, you know, demonstrate it. So here we have full proof that it went on. And because of that, we're able to do what we do. But it's taken 15 years. To give you an idea how things work in this crazy world we're in now, when you're dealing with state stuff, government stuff, it's taken 15 years to finally bring it to a head. And I say 15 years because right after getting those 1,000 pages, I made copies and submitted full copies to the USA Today newspaper and the Washington Post.
Wow.
And they did absolutely nothing. And they had the damn documents right in front of them.
Oh, my Lord. Right?
Wouldn't touch it. Then we put them up on the net. We put the documents up on the internet. You know, at my site, paradigmresearchgroup.org, and at Grant Cameron's site, presidentialufo.com. And then did press releases and, you know, and links, you know, put links out there and did press releases with the links. And I presented and I've done media appearances. I did multi-hour shows on Coast to Coast AM with 3, 4, 5 million people in the audience, directing them to those pages. And still, the media, nothing. Of course, the documents did get the Rockefeller Initiative just become in play on the web, right? There's two levels to the web. There's the web and then there's the news, you know, the non-news web and the news web. And so you could find, when you do searches, you could find the Rockefeller Initiative referred to in tons of web pages. But you couldn't find it on news pages. There was just that, and that barrier is the truth embargo. That's the glass wall. So literally 15 years has been sitting there. Okay, fine. I tried to get it in play in 2008. I'm sorry, in 2000 and – let me get this right now. 2008, yes.
Right.
God, it's been 7 years. I tried to get – it was – and I actually got it mentioned on Fox News where they referred to it. Very briefly, and but nothing, no follow-up, nothing else. No other media would touch it, nowhere. So the election went on, but Mrs. Clinton didn't win. So 7 years go by, all right? And so where we are as of the beginning of the Rockefeller Initiative in November of last year, 2014, is that Secretary Clinton, President Bill Clinton, top advisor, former CEO of the Center for American Progress, John Podesta, chief of staff to Bill Clinton, Leon Panetta, who eventually became CIA director and Secretary of Defense, chief of staff to Clinton Mac McClarty, strong friends of the Clinton and Clinton Secretary of Energy, Bill Richardson, Vice President Al Gore, Clinton friend and Associate Attorney General appointee Webster Hubbell. Over 22 years, never publicly uttered a single word about a three-year effort to engage the issue and get information to the public, shepherded by Lawrence Rockefeller and his money. Not a single word. And in those 22 years, not a single reporter of any news publication ever asked them a single question.
That just leaves my jaw hanging on the floor.
Well, that is the truth embargo. I keep telling people the truth embargo was extraordinarily well done and very powerful, and it worked, right? And the way you know that is simply look at the history and see where only a truth embargo can possibly explain the actions of the Air Force, the NASA, or the Pentagon, or the Clintons, or anybody else. It's obvious, and a huge history would be written about this, right? Eventually it'll come out. So anyway, 22 years go by. So we are heading towards the what will soon be the infamous presidential election of 2016. And in rapid order, PRG was able to set up the chessboard in order to checkmate this issue. And so we hold the citizen hearing on disclosure in National Press Club 2013, April, May. Well, on the very first day, I think it's the first day, it's either the first, second day, I think it's the first day, there's 3 hours of testimony about the Rockefeller Initiative to six former members of Congress. It's right there, 3 hours of it. And so when we shipped the record of the video record to the entire Congress, it included those 3 hours of testimony in the Rockefeller Initiative. Well, that was important. Okay. So then I come into town on November the 20th, and we start the whole media thing. And as the media thing unfolds, the congressional hearing initiative is kind of the basis to get the media's attention. But the Rockefeller Initiative is one of the key areas of evidence that was testified in, at the citizen hearing disclosure is slipped in along with it. It's a two for one. And so what happens is that, and again, the dates are not right in front of me, but my computer is actually almost, you know, it's taken 25 minutes, but my
That's
computer
incredible.
Has survived this attack, this vicious attack, obviously came at it. Certainly it's from the North Korean.
Exactly.
Riot.org and the reporter, Eric Pfeiffer, who shall go down in history, I'm quite sure, does an article, and I forget what triggered it, but they come in and interview me, and they do a full article on this. And in that article, which again, you can find by, there's several ways you can find it, but what you do is you go to paradigmresearchgroup.org, and you just click on that graphic right there. It's a big graphic. You click on it, and that takes you right to the whole status page for this whole thing. And you will see the status report. You will see the media coverage, the articles, press releases, the whole nine yards. And so the Riot.org article by Eric Pfeiffer is published on February the 17th. And in that article, he refers to the Rockefeller Initiative by name with a link to the page that shows all the documents and the information, and becomes the first, and Riot becomes the first mainstream news publication to do it ever, right?
Right.
And thus it begins. Lee Spiegel jumps on virtually at the same time with an article in the Huffington Post. And then Warren Rojas at the Roll Call newspaper, which is part of the Roll Call Congressional Quarterly, which is like the top political news supplier to Capitol Hill and the political intelligentsia, does this huge article, which you can easily go to, in which he's got the Congressional Hearing Initiative, and he's got the Rockefeller, and he's got links to everything. He's got videos up there about Clinton's appearance on Kimmel and Obama's appearance on Kimmel and so forth and so forth. And that hits Capitol Hill. That's number two. All right. And that is then that's picked up on by Jamie Fuller in the New York magazine. And then Rojas comes in with another article on February the 25th, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the big one, A.J. Vincennes, now the Washington correspondent for Mother Jones Magazine, which is a magazine which is now becoming much better known. It's always been around.
It's a great magazine.
It's the best known progressive magazine now in the country.
It's
partially
wonderful.
Because its Washington bureau chief David Corn is now a commentator on consultant on MSNBC. He does this huge article on it. And in this article, I mean, he goes to town. First of all, they Mother Jones creates, if you go to paradigmresearchgroup.org and you click on the graphic and you go and you pull these articles up, they go to great length and expense to create this huge graphic that leads off the article showing a saucer, very sophisticated looking, very slick looking saucer.
And that is awesome with Hillary.
Giant beam of light coming down and beaming Hillary Clinton up into the saucer. That's what they have. And
yeah, that's great.
And it goes on and it goes on, it goes on, it goes on. And it has the Podesta tweet there that Podesta put out on February the 13th, which is now a famous tweet that will also go down in history, when on the day he left his job as consultant to Obama to take over his job as campaign chairman to supposedly the next president. That kind of makes him kind of a pivotal guy here. I mean, we're not talking about any schmo, right? He says, my biggest failure of 2014, and here is two very important words, once again not securing hashtag disclosure of the UFO files, hashtag the truth is out there, copy Maureen Dowd of the New York Times.
And that was incredible. And I just have to interrupt you for 2 seconds because we need to take a break. And this, we were going to go into this again. And I wanted to also address the letter that was received from the Obama administration, because that was interesting. And your responses to that letter were great. So we're going to talk about that. And I'm sorry to cut you off, but we are going to take a 2-minute break. And then we're going to come back. And then about 10:15, we're going to join Merrill Cook. And we're going to talk about the citizens' hearing on disclosure. And we will be right back. This is Erica Lukes. You're listening to KGRA. Stick around after my show. Birthday girl Jill Hansen will be here on her 1-year anniversary for the Q Science Project. We will be right back.
You're listening to UFO Audit with Erica Lukes. To find out more about the audit, visit the website, theufoaudit.com. We'll be right back. With just days to go, you still have time to go to MUFONSymposium.com and get in on the last few tickets available for this year's 46th annual MUFON Symposium. The Mutual UFO Network has assembled a fantastic speaker roster with more than 250 years of combined experience in the subject of UFOs. See Robert Schroeder, Stanton T. Friedman, Mark D'Antonio, Cheryl Jones, Jaime Masson, and many others. This year's keynote speaker is former Defense Minister of Canada, the Honorable Paul Hellyer. And John Greenwald of theblackvault.com will be this year's MC. Be sure and get in on the special events this year, like the Griffith Park Observatory Tour, private speaker panels and one-on-ones, the 90-minute documentary film of Travis Walton, the UFO Witness Theater, produced live on air with KGRA, filled with an amazing cast of characters like Lee Spiegel, Stanton Friedman, Chase Kletsky, John Ventry, and many more. September the 24th through the 27th. Go to MUFONSymposium.com. That's MUFONSymposium.com. Hi, Race Hobbs here with KGRA. You know, all of this technology today was supposed to make our lives easier, but if you ask me, it hasn't. Just the opposite, in fact. Absolutely, it contributes to stress and fatigue. Do you feel tired all the time? Well, let me tell you about our new sponsor, PowerVites. PowerVites is a complete multivitamin mineral formula designed to naturally boost your energy. This multivitamin goes right to work fast. It maximizes absorption due to its unique acidophilus base. This is not a multinational pharmaceutical. The Green Turtle Bay Vitamin Company has been producing PowerVites right here in America for over 20 years. They are nutritionists, making the world better one customer at a time. They produce high-quality products in small, fresh, potent batches and ship directly to you. To order, click on their banner on the KGRA website or visit energywave.com. Be sure to put KGRA Radio in the referral box. That gives us credit and you vitamins. Increase your energy with PowerVites.
The station that won't put you to sleep at work. KGRA, the planet.
Good evening again. This is Erica Luke, your host for UFO Audit here on KGRA Digital Broadcasting Network. Tonight is Ladies Night, as you all know, and I would like to give a special shout out to Jill Hansen celebrating her one-year anniversary. I am happy to be on the same night as you and getting to know you. Your show is fabulous, Jill. I can see you in the chat room. And I hope you have a great show with Bill. 3-hour show, so stick around, get your pajamas, grab a margarita, do whatever you need to do. It's going to be a great night. I am here tonight, and I am joined with somebody that I view as a role model, somebody who has a lot of tenacity and courage, Mr. Stephen Bassett. Merrill Cook will be joining us here in a few moments. But Stephen and I were just talking. We were talking about all the great accomplishments that you're making, and you are wearing them down in Washington, D.C.
Well, we're heading for a breakout. And what I was saying is that in the Mother Jones article, A.J. Vincennes just covers everything. And there's links to the Podesta tweet. There's also links to Obama's appearance on Jimmy Kimmel, where he's asked about the E.T. question exactly the same way Kimmel asked Clinton about it and Bill Clinton about it in 2014. But more importantly, A.J. Vincennes contacts Hillary Clinton's people, Secretary Clinton's people, about the Rockefeller Initiative, thus becoming the first reporter to do so in 22 years. He got a stock blow-off response back from her spokesperson, Nick Merrill, and that was that. Since then, he has tried to reach Podesta. A couple of reporters have tried to reach Podesta. They're not getting any response. And so now the Clinton sort of world, their team, knows that the media is starting to get it and come toward them. And at some point, they're going to have to respond. And then just to finish up, after the A.J. Vincennes article, we get articles in I started doing some interviews. I did an interview with Rudy Crosby, who's a 2-time Emmy Award winner. The Roll Call does another article. And then, of course, the New York Observer breakthrough article of the 16th of this month. There are at least 2 more major articles in the works and other stuff. So the media, it's just growing. All right. Now, here's the punchline. All of this has come together, not totally by accident, but in other words, it's like, it was planned to come together, but in my wildest dreams, I never expected it to be exactly be the way it's turned out. All of this has come together right as the most bizarre, expensive, and lengthy presidential campaign in history is getting underway, going all the way back to November of last year. Okay, 2 years ahead of the actual election, campaigns are getting underway. And as we're approaching, I guess you could say, the critical mass on the political coverage, the situation is we have Secretary Clinton, who has been for some time the front runner to be the next president of the United States, under tremendous pressure and attack from both the left and the right. And her campaign is in serious trouble. That's the campaign that's being run by John Podesta. Right. And then opposing her is not one, not two, not five. Like, you know, the last election was John McCain, right? Mm-hmm. She's up against 16, there used to be 18, mainstream Republican candidates. 16 of them. And so any one of those 16 candidates who becomes aware, and of course we've been sending tweets to them for weeks, right? You know, sending stuff to the campaigns. And of course they're reading all the political press. They know about it. One of those candidates decides, wow, we've been attacking Secretary Clinton about everything from her hairstyle to her servers to what you name it. There's nothing they we can tinfoil hat her. She's a UFO believer. We're going to one of those candidates does that. The moment those words come out of that candidate's mouth, every reporter in Washington, D.C., and every editor is completely unleashed.
Oh, and isn't that sad?
This issue.
And that's, oh my gosh. And, you know, I just think, and I just have to bring this up. This is a little off subject, but it's the whole Frances Barwood thing. You know, well, the second you have in power bringing, or somebody that's demanding anything or mentions UFOs, it's just the beasts of hell are unleashed.
Well, it certainly, it gets heated, and it did get heated, but this will be 100 times hotter than the frenzy that existed in the Arizona situation back in 1997. This is going to be Monica Lewinsky level heat, and it's over because the Clinton people are fully aware that we have the proof for all of this, not just the proof of the extraterrestrial press. I'm talking about the proof of the Rockefeller Initiative. And 24 of the 30 principals, counting government as well as private sector people that were directly involved in the Rock, are still alive. Now, the public side, which includes a lot of the researchers that were involved, they have mentioned this. They've talked about it from time to time, and that is on the web, but the news won't talk to them. They haven't been able to be interviewed on that in the news. So, but they're still here. They're ready to talk to the New York Times tomorrow.
Oh, that's right? Fantastic. Right. And right? I want to add in Merrill Cook really quick, because unfortunately we need to have a 2-hour show. This is what I think. I've been telling Jamie this. So do you mind if we bring him in really quick? Hello.
Oh, hi.
Hello. I just want to say thank you for joining us, Merrill. We really appreciate it. Steven and I are on the phone.
I'm delighted to be here.
Yes, and I want to tell everybody really quick, because we didn't get a chance to properly announce you, but Merrill Cook is an amazing man. I've actually known him for most of my life, which just makes me smile. My grandmother would be so happy, but Merrill is a former congressman in Utah, and he was on the Citizens Hearing for Disclosure. He was one of the people that listened to the testimony that was presented by Stephen Bassett and all of these amazing people. And when you went in, Merrill, you definitely had a little attitude as, well, we'll see what we're going to get. And when you came out of that experience, I believe that your life was really changed. And now you are moving in a direction where you're working with people and you're trying to get the word out.
Well, I think that's really true, Erica. I'm delighted to be on your program. And that it did change. Certainly I think more than it taught me a lot of things that made me realize that there's a lot I hadn't known and a lot I had assumed that wasn't necessarily true. And it's made me want to support any effort to find out a lot more about what the government may know that they might not be telling us, and doing research to find out how we could understand this unidentified aerial phenomena or unidentified flying object phenomena that so many witnesses have testified to.
So let me ask you, Merrill, because I wonder this, being from Utah, I mean, when you came back after the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure, what kind of heat did you take politically or socially for attending the hearing?
Well, you know, it works both ways. It's a double-edged sword in that regard, Erica, because I found a lot of people appreciated what I did and said, great. Others say, hey, Merrill, are you on the fringe of things? Yeah, that does happen to people that want to honestly search for just the truth and search for, you know, and keeping an open mind. Being accused of being a fringe and being, you know, out of the, on the edges, is something that happens to a lot of people that, that later, you know, turn out to be very, significant new things. This is a developing field. It's a field that we need to have an open mind in, right, and learn a lot more than we know right now, especially in this country. Other countries are far more involved in understanding this phenomenon, I think, now in the United States, ever since the National Science Foundation discouraged the Congress from funding the research on unidentified flying objects.
And isn't that unfortunate? I mean, I look at some people that I, some researchers that I know, not from other countries, and they are really getting their governments to work with them. They're getting other researchers. And here we just have such a mentality of we're nasty. And I think a lot of that is some of the people in our field, but then the governmental influence. And it's sad.
Yeah.
But I think people like Stephen and yourself, we'll do what we can to make some changes, and this is fantastic. And it's great to have a person in Utah. This makes me so happy.
Well, I'm delighted, and I take it Stephen's been on the program tonight, right?
I'm here.
A man I have a tremendous respect for, a man who's put his money and his effort and his time where his mouth is, and I have tremendous respect for Stephen Bassett.
Oh, he's amazing. I do, too.
Let me jump in here and say this. Look, we had six former...
Stephen, hello. I didn't realize you were on listening.
I
would have said the same thing if not knowing you were even on. So
I know, and I'll, that check will get to you in the mail. Look, the six former members of Congress, all of which were fantastic. As anybody can see, if they go look at the citizen hearing on disclosure, citizenhearing.org, by the way, is where you can get access to it. This was a very expensive project. Merle Cook and Congresswoman Carolyn Kilpatrick are the two that have shown the most interest in wanting to follow up on this. Now, Merle has been appearing on shows. He's been talking about it. He's given some interviews and so forth. And at some point, I know that Congresswoman Kilpatrick and Congressman Cook are going to. I'm gonna bring them into this deeper. It's just a question of the right time. I need to get further along with the committee, the Congressional House and Senate meetings. But at some point, I'm going to bring them in further, and they're going to play a bigger role. But they've already done the most important thing, and that is they came to Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club. They spent 5 days, and it wasn't easy. Merle was dealing with serious personal issues. Mike Gravel had a major back problem that eventually had to get an operation on shortly after. And they were there, sitting there 8 hours a day, 8 hours for 5 days, and seriously listening to and questioning this extraordinary group of witnesses and creating a 30-hour video record, which I believe will go down in history as one of the most important privately created political events of all time.
Absolutely. And I still watch that, and I just get chills. It is so profound.
Yes.
I have to say that was one of the most interesting weeks I've ever experienced, and I mean that very sincerely, Stephen. And I learned a lot. I hope I asked the kind of questions that penetrated and got some information brought forth and so on from those unbelievably talented and credible witnesses. That's what I think was so impressive, Stephen, is how you had all those witnesses with such credibility from the Peruvian.
And they deserve the credit. Go ahead.
Pardon me?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, from the missile launch officers to the FAA, high-level people to the, I'm thinking of the Peruvian Air Force colonel, with an unbelievable story. Well, when I say unbelievable, I believe everything he said, but unbelievable in terms of the interest and the extraordinary aspect of his you know, taking off to, you know, manning that jet to check what the, you know, something, a threat to the Air Force base. Was they sent the best pilot up and ended up with a major rendezvous with shooting bullets of major charges at this unidentified flying object. I mean, those things were incredible to me, and I knew almost nothing about them before that week, Stephen.
Well,
so that,
one of the reasons you,
again,
you didn't know anything, Merrill, is that the truth embargo has prevented you from knowing, and the military intelligence complex pulled it out from under the Congress's oversight some years ago. And let me mention something else that's kind of interesting. You know, a number of cable channels were approached about this extraordinary material, and they all declined.
Really?
Right? Some of the citizen hearing finally made it onto History Channel, only because the Ancient Alien series, which is very popular, wanted to use some of it in one of their segments. But in terms of larger exposure of this, no, none of the cable channels want to deal with it. Now, of course, it's you can get it. You can find parts on YouTube. You can get the entire thing at citizenhearing.org. And, of course, the entire Congress has a set. But should it have been out and widely disseminated and grasped by the media back 2 years ago? No. Yes, it should have, but it didn't happen. It's okay. It's all coming to a head now.
Well, it should have happened. I mean, well, I did notice, Steve, that like New York Times was there. You had some major media that was covering at least aspects of this. But I get what you're saying here, of course. But I was pretty impressed at how interested some of the Salt Lake. I know the Salt Lake Tribune papers were kind of interested in all this. So
they were in that but, you know.
I think I'm not questioning what you're saying there about being ignored to a large extent. But wouldn't have happened, I don't think, in other countries.
Well, we got plenty of media coverage. What hasn't happened is the television venues would not take some of this material and cover it, show it, replay it, right? So it's been there. It's been up on the net. They still won't touch it. Now, when the time comes, they will. And in a way, the time is now. This is all coming to a head, Merrill. In the middle of this very weird election, which I'm sure you're following kind of closely, and the nature of this campaign, this election, and the people involved. Again, if Secretary Clinton had retired 10 years ago, this would be a much more difficult gambit. But she didn't. She is now running for president for the second time. John Podesta, who was involved in the Rockefeller Initiative, is her campaign chairman. All right? And her husband, of course, is everywhere. He hadn't gone anywhere. They've got multi-hundred million dollar massive foundation that's operating around the world and taking millions of dollars in from some of the biggest corporations out there. They are major players on the world stage wanting to become even more powerful, but they are unable, because of their political aspirations, to speak to an event that is now 22 years old and well out there on the web, and it's all catching up with them. Now, I say this not as an angry thing against the Clintons. I am not in the business of electing presidents, and I'm not picking candidates here. I'm simply saying that history has arrived at Secretary Clinton's doorstep, and she and her top advisor, John Podesta, have a decision to make. Let this thing overwhelm them, let the media arrive en masse at their door, or proactively step into this and, without being pressured, come directly forward and start speaking to it and let history decide her fate, as opposed to manipulating history and the press to slide into the White House, which is what we've been seeing from both parties for far too long.
Absolutely. And I think this is going to be an interesting year. I'm very excited, and I'm so proud and just amazed at the progress that you have made. And Merrill, it's so fun to get to know you again. And you're going to be speaking at our MUFON Utah meeting on October 16th.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to that opportunity to speak there. And thank you for that invitation.
Absolutely. This is going to be great. We've got a lot of good things going on in Utah. And Stephen, I just wanted to ask you really quick. We had a question in the chat room about Tom DeLonge. Have you heard anything about his meeting with Podesta?
Sure. I know about Tom DeLonge. I have tried. He was, of course, the head guy of Blink 182, which is interest in this subject goes all the way back to the early 90s. I have tried to reach Tom DeLonge several times, and I've just not been able to do it. I'd love for him to contact me.
Okay, well, maybe I'll see what I can do. He might be at the symposium. You never know.
Stephen probably knows. I might have said this on another program, but I have tried to reach directly John Podesta. Now, he used to always answer my calls right over my office when I was in the Congress, and he was working for President Clinton, Bill Clinton, of course. But no, I'm having trouble even having him return my calls now on this subject. So I, you know, and yet I think John Podesta, as Stephen has always said, could be a crucial link to this whole tearing down the truth embargo. I really believe that.
And
so I'm a little
man.
Disappointed. He knows why I'm trying to reach him, and he has not been returning my calls.
Well, you're going to have to keep it up.
Doesn't mean I'm going to quit trying, by
the
show.
Way. No, we're never going to quit trying. We will. And since I'm here,
well, Erica can tell you, I'm not Mr. Persistent here in Utah.
Not at all. And my grandmother would just be up there laughing. I know she is. She just thinks this is the best thing. So it's wonderful. But I just want to thank both of you for.
And I've got to say, your wonderful grandmother is having a nice reunion with my dear Camille.
I think she is too. They're both very happy. And so
they sure liked each other.
They did. They loved each other. And
it's
wonderful. But yeah. I feel blessed to know both of you. And I want to just say thank you so much. I will have you both back on. I want to give a shout out again to all of my friends in the chat room. Thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting UFO Audit. We will give you links and updates on Paradigm Research Group and Stephen and Merrill. And we are going to get some good things going on. So next week, I will be at the MUFON Symposium. Look on UFO Audit on Facebook for live updates, as well as MUFON.com. And we will see you next week. And happy anniversary, Jill. Have a great show. See you guys next week.